Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
I've been working on a talk about Dogen's time and being, and I realized that I'm just not up to that task. So I decided instead to tell some stories. And ever since human beings have existed on this planet, we tend to gather around in the evenings and tell stories. So I think that that's always a good activity and something that we can all gain from. So rather than taking a PhD class in philosophy by talking about Dogen, I'm just gonna give a few little teaching stories. I wanna give clear thoughts about things that are more immediate and relatable, more helpful for us Zen students trying to apply the practice to our everyday life. In some past talks, I've talked about experiences in my life that influenced my current understanding of practice, because I hope that by sharing them, it might help both me and others working through similar feelings or difficulties. But my top goal in giving a talk is to help myself and others to better understand how does our practice help us to see more clearly, to find understanding of our all too human lives? So bringing people together through stories is what we're going to do tonight. I'm just going to tell three stories tonight. The first one is called The Cracked Pot. Once there was a water bearer who had two carrying pots for water, and one of the two pots had a crack that leaked water. When the water bearer filled his two pots at the river, he hung them on each end of a long pole that he could carry on his shoulders as he returned to his home. The cracked pot would be only half full by the time he arrived, having leaked along the path on the way home, while the perfect pot held a full volume of water. The perfect pot was very proud of its capacity to deliver a full amount, but the cracked pot felt like a failure. "I'm ashamed of myself," he said to the bearer, "because water leaks from me and I never can give you the full amount you put into me at the river." The water bearer thought about it and replied, "I've known all along that water leaks out from the crack in you. So I sowed some seeds on your side of the path, so that the water you leak helped them to grow and flourish. These flowers are beautiful, and they're appreciated by bees and birds and people who come along this path. Without the crack in you, these flowers would never have grown and given joy to so many. Embrace your imperfection, because it has helped to create value and beauty in the world." So we should all value our uniqueness and even our imperfections, as what we perceive as shortcomings may actually create some unique value and beauty in the world. The second story is called Just Wash Your Bowl. Once a new monk came to Joshu and said, "I've just entered the monastery. Will you please teach me?" Joshu asked him, "Have you eaten your rice porridge?" And the monk replied, "I have eaten." Joshu said, "Then you had better wash your bowl." At that moment, the young man was enlightened, if only. The message of this exchange is, don't get your mind too caught up in this thinking about the meaning of life. Instead, just do. Just wash your bowl, and in the washing, you'll find all that you need. We may think it's necessary to strategize and intellectualize everything, but in reality, that may not help us in choosing the best option. So the takeaways are just be present in the moment. The monk's request for teaching is met with a simple question: have you eaten? This question brings the young monk's attention to the present moment, reminding us that sometimes the most meaningful lesson can be found in the very mundane activities of ordinary life. 2, instead of overthinking things, just take the next useful action. Often practical actions may be the true wisdom, and just a simple activity like washing your bowl can lead to a sense of purpose and fulfillment. 3, embrace simplicity. The story encourages us to simplify our life and focus on what's immediately in front of us. By doing this, we can find meaning and contentment in even the simplest tasks and interactions. We may realize thereby that we don't always need grand plans and profound insights to live a fulfilling life. And 4, let go of overanalysis. Overthinking and analyzing every single detail of life can create anxiety and even a state of paralyzing indecision. Joshu's teaching suggests that we should trust our own instincts more and not dwell too much on every single choice. Usually, it's enough just to take the next logical step, whatever it may be, and then learn from the experience. In a world filled with distractions and complexities, this Zen story is a good reminder to embrace the beauty of simplicity. Don't be depressed. Don't overthink or overanalyze. Just do. This is your life, and you can do it. And then the third story is called Seeds of Transformation. There was a 16-year-old boy named Jadav, and every day he passed by this dry, empty lot not far from the village that he lived in. The earth was dry and cracked, unable to support life. Nothing grew there, and it was pretty desolate. But he saw that it had a potential to be green and beautiful, and he decided that he would plant trees and grasses there and transform it into a lush forest. The others in his village thought he was just a foolish boy and tried to dissuade him from even trying to do this. But he still collected seeds from nearby trees and wildflowers in other areas and brought bagfuls of these seeds to the barren field. He planted the seeds lovingly and watered them, coming every day to the field to tend to it. He built little bridges of bamboo to get across the field, and he also filled cracked pots near the seeded areas with water so that they would slowly drip water near the newly sown seeds. There were no signs of life for many weeks, and the villagers mocked Jadav. But he was not deterred by their skepticism, and he continued to visit and tend to the dry field every single day. After several months, one seed sprouted and sent up a green shoot. Overjoyed, he celebrated the miracle and renewed his belief that the forest he envisioned would come to be. His faith and joy were contagious, and soon some of the other villagers joined him in his efforts, tending to the seedlings with him. Very slowly, the once bare field began to transform, with small shoots and seedlings appearing. Little by little, over the span of about 30 years, the field transformed from a barren wasteland into a thriving forest with tall trees, blooming flowers, and a constant symphony of birdsong, and it was inhabited by many different kinds of wildlife. Jadav dedicated his life to creating a forest, and today, he's a grown man and still living nearby. As you can tell, this is a true story. And one day, a traveler passing through marveled at the beautiful forest. The villagers told him about Jadhav and his unwavering belief in the power of transformation. When the traveler met Jadhav, he asked him how he had transformed this dry, barren field into this magnificent forest. Jadhav smiled and said, "I simply believed in the potential that existed within the field. I knew that with patience, love, and care, even the most barren place can be transformed into something beautiful. I had seen so many forests disappear and wildlife disappear, and I decided to do something about it." So just as this barren field became a forest, our hearts and minds too can become beautiful and lush forests if we nurture them with kindness and faith. In our human life, with patience and persistent effort, even the most seemingly barren and hopeless situations can be transformed into something fruitful and beautiful. So if things seem to be bleak and unfruitful in your life, remember Jadhav's story and that he turned a barren field into a large forest filled with life and beauty to share with everyone. We can bring about positive change and even make what seems impossible into a reality. So be positive, persistent, and never give up. So those are my stories today to share with you. I hope you like them. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Carolina, have you a question? Go ahead.
Thank you for your story. I like the one about washing your balls. That's an old story. Oh. And there's no need to say anything. Just don't talk.
I'm sorry, Carolina, I didn't hear the first part of what you said.
It's a well-known story. And every time I've heard it, I've thought different things, like, oh, you know, the new student, you know, doesn't need to stop and ask questions of the master or whatever. But it's basically do what you have to do, but don't talk. So here I am talking. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carolina.
Nice stories.
Yeah, I liked what they had to offer to us. You know, I found them encouraging. Yes, Dave Riddell.
Looking at the second and third stories, it wasn't in the sense that the second story advises us to focus on the moment, not really about the long term. The story of the forest says that things haven't grown over the space of 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's continuous education.
Yeah.
Wondering if it's not simply a question of living in the moment versus sustained effort, but rather the way we approach the moment, the way we approach the
space. I think that's true.
You can go right and you can go wrong in either of those two.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's also the setting of where each one happened. One of them happened in a monastery where people aren't, you know, talking about everything all the time. And so doing becomes really important, and knowing, you know, what to do in the next moment is an important part of the monastery working well. People are supposed to know what their tasks, you know, are or what needs to get done in order for everybody to work together. But when it comes to the natural world, nothing usually happens very fast. You know, so Jadhav was thinking in terms of the long haul, and he knew that, you know, he couldn't just plant seeds and overnight it would become a forest. It took a lot of work. And so there are some things that we have to work on very diligently for a long time before they bear fruit. So that's a different kind of a situation. And in the monastery, just doing what needs to be done is what eventually is, that's like the seeds that will bear fruit. Because just every day that you're doing just whatever needs to be done, the entire group works well together. So that was how I kind of saw it as being related. Could everybody hear that online? Oh, he said that Stephen Batchelor, at a talk that he had heard him give at Spirit Rock, said, it's not, can you repeat it again? So he said the Buddha said the Eightfold Path is not a path of going from one thing to another. It's a, you know, transforming one thing immediately into another. It's about putting one foot in front of the other, and over time, this transformation will happen. Which I think that's a really good part of the understanding that the Buddha seemed to give. You know, just don't expect immediate results, you know, just because you're sitting in meditation, or you just came back from, you know, a sesshin, and you think that you should all of a sudden be enlightened. You know, it's just a very slow process of change that occurs in us humans. Thank you, Dave. Yes, Anna. So Anna was asking, she says that, you know, stories come at us all the time, and, you know, even when we're trying to meditate. But what you were wondering was...
She's wondering
about the input and output of stories. Sometimes stories are really helpful to us because it just kind of shows us something that is at work in us that we weren't aware of. And it just, you know, kind of makes us a little bit more present and conscious to something. And then sometimes there's something that take us away. So I don't know if there's, I think the value in stories is that through stories, it's easier for us humans to connect to concepts about life. We can relate to certain things in stories that, you know, that we've experienced or that we've felt, and, you know, we can see people responding to situations that we may have had to respond to. And for example, with the water bearer saying to the cracked pot, "Oh no, I know that you're imperfect, and that's created beauty in the world." You know, and I think, you know, don't ever feel bad about yourself because you've done a good job, you know, and that's the kind of thing that we go through in life. We always kind of feel, oh, am I good enough? Am I, you know, going to make things better or make things worse? You know, what about, will my efforts bear fruit? So we're always, you know, trying to figure out what's our place in life. And you know, are we doing good by being who we are? So, you know, having somebody who kind of says to you, "Oh no, you know, this whole path wouldn't be as beautiful as it was, you know, if you didn't have that little flaw." And we've all got our flaws. We know that our the little cracks that that we have in our personality or in our, you know, our ways of doing things. So I think it's kind of beautiful that this story brings out that, you know, don't always see don't compare yourself to other people, because you know, you may be through your, you know, your own unique flaws, you may be doing something good in the world that you didn't even know you were doing. You know, maybe just by making other people feel comfortable that, you know, because they know they have flaws too. And if they see that you can be accepting of yours, perhaps they can be accepting of theirs. Any ideas on that? Dave?
It does remind me of a similar story in one of Suzuki Roshi's chapters. I don't remember if it's in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, or Not Always So, where he talks about horse, the different kinds of horses.
Oh, the different kind, the good horse, the poor horse.
Yeah. Bad horse, you have to really beat on them. In a lot of ways, that harder horse is better.
I don't remember the exact way, but I remember that story. Dave was referring to a story in Suzuki Roshi's book about the good horse and the moderate horse and the poor horse, you know, and sometimes the poor horse is the best horse because they move more slowly and carefully, or I think it was something like that. I don't remember exactly what the takeaway was, but you know, they were saying, you know, you don't always have to be the best horse to give value in your life. And yeah, that was a really good story too. Kind of, you know, makes you feel when you're trying, when you're struggling, you know, and you feel like, oh, I'll never be good enough, or I'll never get to that level. You just have to kind of think of that. And even in your even if you're the poor horse today, perhaps by persisting, you'll become, you know, a better horse in the future. Does anybody have any stories that they can think of that they would like to share? Okay, well, thank you all for listening to this story session and sharing your insights.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.